Okay, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fine, whatever. You might want to watch it.
No, I...
You might want to. Yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Sweet Smell of Succession, an unofficial recap podcast about the HBO original series Succession. I'm David Chen. I'm the host of podcasts like The Filmcast and Culturally Relevant. Joining me, as always, she's the host of podcasts such as Extra Hot Great, Listen to Sassy, and Again With This, Tara Ariano. Tara, how goes it today?
It's war! Just kidding. It's great.
Welcome to the show, everyone. You can find more episodes of this podcast at successionpodcast.com. Email us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. Every week on this podcast, we recap and spoil and speculate about the latest episode of Succession, which is airing right now on HBO and HBO Max. You can find this episode that we're going to recap is season 3, episode 1, entitled Succession. Succession is the name of this episode. So, Tara, why don't we start by talking about overall thoughts about the season premiere? What'd you think?
I think probably this was due to the fact that it was filmed in COVID times, but I appreciated and thought it was very effective how claustrophobic it felt, ping-ponging back and forth between the people in New York and the people not in New York. Obviously, you know, there was a reason we had smaller groups of people than usual, but I thought that worked very effectively for the story that was being told.
Yeah, I really liked it as well. And we should point out, yeah, the whole season was filmed during COVID, and they also decided to not mention COVID in the show, is my understanding, according to the New Yorker profile of Jesse Armstrong.
Yeah.
So that's like a big challenge. Like, that's just a big production challenge to, you know, I don't know about you, but COVID was a pretty stressful time for me, and just like knowing what was okay and when it was okay to do certain things and what things to do. And I can't imagine how difficult it was to coordinate and execute a shoot of this complexity during COVID. So like, there's already kind of a baseline of bonus points just for being able to get it done at all.
Yeah.
And so I really appreciate what they were able to achieve. But yeah, I am very much in awe of what they were able to accomplish. And I thought this episode was pretty great. Like, I like that they started it immediately after the events of the last episode, because I feel like it's cool for a show to kind of reckon with some of the big decisions it makes. I won't say it's easy, but it's definitely easier to like have a huge cliffhanger like what happened in season 2, episode 10, and then have some kind of flash forward like 5 years later or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and then you don't need to deal with like all the complicated things that kicks up.
Yeah.
And it very much feels like they're going to deal with it and really make a good effort of like explaining how messy such a thing would be, is my
Yeah, concern. I don't think you set up a cliffhanger like that if you're not planning to pay it off. So.
Agreed. some people have done that. Some people have done that. I'm just going to throw something out there. 6 Feet Under, season 3, comes to mind. Not quite as big of a cliffhanger, but it just, you know, that was a... I think that show kind of broke my brain in terms of how you could pick up a previous season. But yeah, I'm glad they picked it up where they did and that we're going to get a lot of the follow. Also, I'm just really happy to see these characters again, Tara, you know? Happy to have them on my screen, you know, kind of know who they are to some degree and have them cracking wise and saying all the things that they're saying.
Yeah. I mean, I know we're in a time of fractured media, but I think people still enjoy the experience of watching a show all together at once. And I think in the time since Succession has been off the air, people have tried to like, you know, do methadone HBO shows that were really lesser, like The Undoing, which we talked about on your Patreon.
Oh my God.
Just to name one example, Mare of Easttown. I know people were really into that. I never watched it. It's the same kind of thing where it's just like, that's our show. That's our Sunday night show. It like harkens back to an earlier time, speaking of 16 Under, where that felt like, you know, part of the monoculture, or Game of Thrones, I guess, for people who enjoy that. I know you were among them. But yeah, I think Succession is more of a four quadrant play for HBO. People can watch it and enjoy it on so many different levels that I feel like that's why people are generally excited to to re-engage with Royce.
Yeah, it really does appeal to many different groups of people, media people, people into journalism, people into business. And if you're not into any of that, just you're in for the soap opera drama of the Roys and grappling for power and all that stuff like that. Like, it really does have like a broad group of appeal. Even if you're just into really great acting, you got amazing thespians like, you know, Jeremy Strong and Brian Cox doing their thing, you know, so it's wonderful to see, wonderful to have this back on the air. I'm really happy to see it back on the air and to be talking about it with you. And of course, with our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. There are many Succession podcasts out there, and we are grateful that you've chosen ours to accompany you during this.
Yes, welcome back.
Welcome back. Welcome back. All right, Tara, why don't you help us break down what exactly happened this episode?
I would love to. I think we can breeze through the Succession probably more quickly than we may as the season goes on, because there really are just two co-equally important plot lines. So let's start with the people who are not in New York. They're in Croatia. They've been helicoptered off of the yacht that we saw everybody on in the season two finale. So Logan takes Frank, Carl, and Tom with him to Sarajevo, since Logan cannot get extradited to the U.S. from there, and he doesn't know if he's going to be arrested if and when he returns to America. And a conversation with someone from the president's office, as in the president of the United States, was not reassuring. So Logan then also sends Jerry, Roman, and Shiv back to New York, and then tells everyone on his plane that the three of them on the other plane are all in contention to be the interim CEO after he officially steps back from the role. The reason for the three of them being, we want a kid, so Roman or Shiv, but we want a woman, so Jerry or Shiv, but we want experience, so Jerry or Roman.
Clear as mud. Clear as mud.
Yeah. So Shiv fails to get Lisa Arthur, a celebrity lawyer played by Sanaa Lathan, to represent Logan. So she loses her shot at CEO. And since Roman had basically told Logan to pick Jerry over himself, Jerry wins the bake-off. How much of a win it'll be remains to be seen. My thought about this regarding the planes, I was really watching them on the tarmac because the wrangling of them was the opening vignette in the Jerry Armstrong New Yorker profile that we mentioned in our preview episode. We'll link it in the show notes again. Subscription required note. But I kind of felt like they could have cheated it for how much we saw those planes.
I see. You're saying they could have not shot it out of the actual tarmac with airplanes and stuff.
Or they could have shot on the tarmac but not shown the planes or CGI'd them or something.
Yeah, I think the way they did it, it felt very authentic. But, you know, another thing about that profile that really sticks out to me is that one of the things that struck me that I never really thought about and that I'm now thinking about all the time is that part of the show is about illuminating how even the ultra rich are subject to some level of inconvenience and humiliation in their lives. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's what we really see this episode that comes out is, yes, they have billions of dollars, but, they are in this situation reduced to waiting in airport lounges, which are in general, like, I don't know if you've ever been to an airport lounge, Tara. Like, I've been in a couple in my life, but like,
I don't want to brag, but yes, I've been in an airport lounge.
The ceiling for how good an airport lounge can be is pretty low, in my opinion. Like, there's very few I've seen that I'm like, ooh, this is a place I actually want to spend time in, you know? Mm-hmm. Airport lounge is definitely better than waiting out in the non lounge area, but only slightly, I would argue. And you know, that's what basically the characters in this episode are doing for a lot of the episode. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, going to hotels that might not be of their, to their taste and so on. And so that part really struck me. Also, definitely always a good idea to have a list of non-extradition countries, you know, in your pocket at all times. This is advice that I follow in my own life. So,
yeah, I forgot to say Hugo is with them as well, the communications guy played by Fisher Stevens. He's there too.
So why don't we dive into some of these other specific interactions when it comes to what's happening over on the Roy, the Logan Roy side, right?
Yeah. Well, it was funny to me how Shiv sort of tried and tried not to claim a relationship with this Lisa Arthur, this new Sanaa Lathan character. You know, definitely not trying to overpromise on how close they are, since when we see them together later in the episode, it is clear they are not friends.
Yeah, that struck me. That scene struck me really oddly because I felt like that scene almost should have been after the Kendall scene with that character.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because it felt like they had already kind of cemented their relationship before Shiv meets with her. So it felt odd to me because when we see that lawyer again with Kendall, he hasn't even like committed to her. Like they're not even committed to each other at that point.
Yeah.
So. It was weird. Maybe the fact that Kendall gave her a call initially was already enough to kind of disqualify her from the job. But
right. Well, Logan talks about that on the plane. He says we have three law firms in contention and then five more, you know, that we're keeping in the back burner because he wants to create conflicts so that Kendall is jammed out.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think Kendall getting to Lisa first, that's what happened.
Yeah. But I agree with you. It seemed like a friendship in name only. Tara. It's like a professional relationship and certainly it turns badly. And Shiv is not a great loser, in my opinion. And we see the results of that in this episode.
I mean, I just assumed that because this Lisa is supposed to be, she's just like a celebrity lawyer. It seems like she's a Gloria Allred type. So I just figured like, oh, they've run into each other in Democratic Party circles or something, but they're not like pals.
Well, I thought the amazing part of that whole plot line was, I think there's a moment when Kendall's talking to her and he's like, you know, they're going to make movies about you. Like, we should make a movie about you, which I think was actually a veiled reference to Gloria Allred and representing Harvey Weinstein.
She didn't. Her daughter did.
Oh, her daughter did. I apologize.
And her daughter's name is Lisa also.
Yeah. So Lisa Bloom. Yeah.
Yes.
Who theoretically had a movie that was kind of in production by the Weinstein Company while she was representing her, and it was all very unfortunate. So yes, I didn't make the Lisa connection until just now. So thank you for that, Tara.
Also noteworthy, Tom is actually the one who first announces that Shiv and Lisa know each other. And while I don't think he was trying to set her up to fail, I also don't think he wasn't setting her up to fail. Like they seem. Like they've just decided to press pause on their relationship problems in the current crisis with Logan. But here, let's hear how they part at the airport in Croatia. This clip two.
Hey, so we'll talk about things when we get back, right?
Yeah, of course.
Cool.
You know, because I love you.
Thanks. Thank you. And you'll see him again.
Well, yeah, obviously I'll see him again, Tom. Why would you say that?
I'm being nice, Shiv. If you're worried that he won't come home, I think that's unlikely. Okay, so...
Well, I know that.
Okay. Great. Fine.
Okay. Oh, did Ken call you?
Ken? Me? No. No? No, no. Not to speak. No, what? Did he call you?
No.
No.
No. No, I was just wondering. Okay, well... Look after him.
Okay.
Keep in touch.
Okay.
Always a rough parting when somebody says I love you and you say thanks in response. You know? never really a good sign, unfortunately.
Yeah. And not who we would have expected before that season two finale of who would be on either side of that exchange saying those things.
Yeah. I mean... It really ended very wistfully for the two of them, right? Because for season two, episode 10, Tom kind of has that moment with her on the beach where he's saying how he's not particularly happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then she kind of goes to bat for him and basically takes him out of the spotlight for the the blood sacrifice.
Right.
And I don't think we ever see that acknowledged, as far as I can recall. Like, I don't think we get a moment where, like, she says, hey, I got you not blood sacrificed. And he's like, oh, thank you. Like, I don't think that ever happens.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of the next moment we pick it up. But it definitely foretells that there's still unresolved issues to be worked out with their relationship.
Yeah, for sure. And there's also a moment when Logan calls Shiv to ask her to get Lisa Arthur and she hangs up and, you know, jokes to Roman that Logan had just told her that she was CEO. We don't know that he didn't say that also. We only hear her half of that conversation. And I don't think there are ever, of course, any accidents on this show, and which phone conversations in this episode that we hear both halves of versus not. Like the conversation where Roman calls Logan and says, I want it to be me, of course, but if it's not me, it should be Jerry, blah, blah, blah. We hear both halves of that conversation. So I just wonder if it's possible that later we'll hear from Shiv, like, he said I had it and then he took it away.
Yeah, I don't know. Has the show ever? I guess it has done that. Right? Like in the season two finale, like Kendall kind of goes into that press conference and we don't know what he's going to do, and he kind of surprises everyone. So that kind of stuff has happened in the past, I guess.
Yeah.
I would say it's rare, though. I think it's rare for the show to not show us what's actually happening. You know, mm-hmm. even when characters are being underhanded, we are usually privy to them about to be underhanded. Like
that's
with
true.
What's her name? Rhea in season two.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's possible. You know, I don't want to derail us or get too far ahead of ourselves, but there is this whole sequence where Shiv wants to put her name in for contention for CEO again in this episode.
Yeah.
And to me, that was the only part of this episode that struck me as false, because this is not the CEO job that you want. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You want the CEO job of being in charge of Waystar Royco when they're like ascendant and, you know, on top of the world and stuff. You don't, this is a cleanup job right now, yeah. At this point. Right. Mm-hmm. And so to me, the idea that Shiv would still want it at this point stretched credulity for me.
Mm-hmm.
How does that strike you? You know what I mean? Like at this point, because of all the terrible negative news, this is like, I wouldn't want to be CEO of this company at this point, you know?
I mean, logically, none of them should want it. This also comes up in the second episode of the series, Shit Show of the Fuck Factory, where yeah. They offer it to Jerry, or they're like, do you want it? She's like, do I want to be in charge of this failing company? No. Like, this is because she's the only one that knows about all their debt problems that they're in at that point, and possibly still. I don't even remember. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just like in a crisis, you take what you can get and you hope that, you know, because you're new, the dirt doesn't stick to you. I have no idea. I'm never going to be in this position, so I'll never find out.
So Tara, let's talk about what's going on with Jerry in this episode.
Yeah. So based on the character posters for this season, we talked about this in our preview episode too. People seem to want these two to get together, or the show wants people to want them to get together. As I already said, I don't love this pairing, other than as like business collaborators, where it seemed at first like she was just sort of trying to mentor him. But I kind of feel like the romantic stuff ran its course in season two, but the premiere keeps it alive, as we can hear in clip three.
Look at us here, waiting. So fucking hot.
If it's you, you think you're clean?
Yeah, obviously. There's a bed through here if you want to give it a go.
The pipeline was still sending cruise girls out west when you were in LA, though, right?
Yeah, that was mostly over. There's deniability, Frank thinks. We essentially didn't even actually know. That's all on the little guys and Mo.
Uh-huh. What about the satellite launch? Accelerating it.
I'd lay you badly, but I'd lay you gladly.
Can I remind you, Roman, that so far as I'm concerned, nothing has ever happened between us other than of a professional nature.
Mm-hmm. Gotta be curious, though, right? A young fighter in his prime. Technically raw, but, you know, hungry.
I am quite a successful person, Roman, and I remain so by avoiding mess.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're stuck in this room for I don't even know how long, and no one would know.
I'm going to ask a kind of weird question, which is like, it felt like Roman was saying he wanted to have sex with Jerry in the scene, but I didn't think that was his thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, this is the question, right? Like he's been repulsed by sexual advances from women his age over the course of this. So it may just be that older women are his thing and he didn't realize it until this seemed like it was a possibility with Jerry, in which case, if that's his deal, great. But I feel like the show hasn't decided what his deal is.
Yeah, I thought his whole kink was like being degraded, you know,
was
the sense I got.
Yeah.
And like it felt to me possible he could not have conventional sex.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I spent a lot of time thinking about Roman sex life is where I'm going with this. So anyway,
that's your kink and that's fine.
So where do we think? So you're not a fan of the Jerry Roman thing. I am a fan of it. I, like I said in the preview, I think there's something interesting about having a like kind of less conventional relationship on the air, but also I think that there is something to the idea of Jerry being able to make Roman a better person and a better business person. Then I'm kind
okay,
of
okay. Better business person, sure.
Sure, yeah, better business person. Let's stick with that. Let's stick with that. Mm-hmm. So, which I'm kind of a fan of. So, I'm kind of interested to see how that nurturing relationship evolves.
Yeah,
so.
I wouldn't mind the romantic stuff if we had been given any indication that Roman has had a normal sexual relationship with anyone else.
Yeah.
But we haven't. So that's why this one I'm not in support of it.
So where do we leave Logan Roy in this episode?
Well, there's a lot and also not much to say about Logan because everything is just sort of swirling around him. But I can't decide if he knows how fucked he is. And at the same time, maybe he's less fucked than I think he is because he's very rich and very powerful. And even if he didn't get the lawyer he wanted, I'm sure he's gonna get one that's, you know. Also a bastard. That's what everyone says about this Leo Upton that is their second choice. But Frank and Carl have a discussion on the plane about whether previous jams that Logan and the company have been in were worse than this. And it seems like that debate was inconclusive.
Yep. I think what is going to be interesting about this season is how isolated Logan is from the rest of his family, right? Mm-hmm. We see this a little bit in the trailers of him being like, where's my family? And we see it in this episode of like everyone kind of going off to their own places. Last season, season two, felt like it depended too much on all the family members being in one location.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like they had to go to these great lengths to contrive ways that would justify the family all being in one place. Like,
yeah.
Oh, they're going to Arjustice. Oh, they're going to this huge celebration of Logan.
Yeah.
You know, oh, they're going to turn him, you know, like all these
yes.
things.
Yeah.
And this season, it feels like it's getting away from that already right out of the gate.
Yeah.
So it'll be curious to see how his relationship with his children evolves and how separated he is physically as well as emotionally from them this season.
Yeah, we also still don't know what's up with Marcia.
Yeah, I don't think. Do we see her at all in this episode?
No. We haven't seen her since she left Logan in Scotland.
Hmm. All right. Well, we will see how that plays out. Let's take a quick break, Tara. You know, people might be listening to this Succession podcast. They might not know that we do other amazing podcasts.
Do we ever?
You want to give a plug for some of the stuff that you work on when you're not podcasting about Succession?
Sure. Well, when I'm not podcasting about Succession, I'm recapping Succession for Decider.com.
Yay.
So you can find my writing about the show there. But I do, as you say, also have other podcasts. So Again With This is out on Mondays. It's about Melrose Place these days. Formerly, we went all the way through all 10 seasons of Beverly Hills 90210, recapping that episode by episode. And then Tuesdays, I have Listened to Sassy, where my husband Dave and I and our friend Pam Ribbon go through issues of Sassy magazine, the classic teen mag of the 80s and 90s, and, you know, flip through them, talk about what's held up and what hasn't. And then Wednesdays is Extra Hot Great, a general TV podcast where we welcome guests and talk about the TV of the day and of the week.
Well, I'm one of Tara's biggest fans. I would recommend you check out her Succession recaps. They're awesome. And all her podcasts. Extra Hot Great is a regular part of my rotation each week.
Thank you so
much. You can find
much.
My stuff at The Filmcast podcast, where we review movies, and also Culturally Relevant, where I talk with interesting authors, actors, and directors. And follow me on Twitter at Dave Chensky. All right, Tara, let's get on with the rest of the episode. What is going on in New York this week?
Oh, boy. Well, Kendall and Greg are in New York, of course. The last place we saw them was with Carolina at the big bombshell press conference. Kendall's also still got Jess, his assistant, but he seems to have been under the impression that he could keep his job and take Waystar down from his desk in the office until Carolina's like, well, no, you're going to get fired. He also can't do all his scrambling at his apartment because he's trying to avoid reporters. So he ends up setting up a war room at the home of the supremely patient Rava, his ex-wife, played by Natalie Gold. And from a business standpoint, everything is trending his way. He is the one to hire Lisa Arthur, as we've already alluded to. But Rava ends up roadkill on Kendall's road to victory. Let's talk about Greg.
Yeah.
Because I'm worried that the show's writers are making him too goofy. I said in my Decider recap that he was maybe turning into the Ralph Wiggum of the show. And I guess it doesn't matter that we've never known what Greg actually does all day in his job. Like, we don't know what Roman does either. It doesn't matter. Their job is being rich. But Greg's ineptitude is starting to be one note to me. And this formerly compelling outsider character, I feel like it's turning into a bucket of quirks. Let's hear clip four.
Hi. I just want to let you know, I was doing his media monitoring for a while, but you'll be taking that over.
Yeah, that would be us.
Yeah. I wrote down a lot of tweets, like relevant tweets that felt kind of important. So is that useful to pass on? Or
we can find them. They're on Twitter.
Yeah, they're all on Twitter. Yeah.
But thank you.
No worries. Here to help. I'm on hold over here. Canceling my mom's credit card.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah, no, it's pretty stupid, actually. My grandpa cut her off. Long story, I guaranteed her gold card just because I thought that'd be like a good son thing to do. And then she just saw the press conference and she's kind of like under the impression that Ken's taking the company down. And so she's over here panic buying Nutribullets and buying a lot of Krugerrands, like a very particular currency. And she never even drinks the smoothies.
I mean, it's funny, but it's like, is it too much?
You know, I was surprised at this opinion of yours, Tara, because I guess I feel like nothing has changed about the Cousin Greg characterization. He has become more cunning and blackmail-y over time, but I feel like his level of incompetence has not changed that much. So to me, the character still works. And honestly, one of my favorite things this episode is watching Jess Jordan's reaction to his character. As he's trying to like sort through tweets, and I think she's just kind of quietly seething at his incompetense the entire time. Is my sense.
Yes, Jess is great. Yes. I got no complaints about Jess.
Amazing assistant from the heavens, way better than Kendall deserves. So
no kidding.
Yeah.
But also on the Greg tip, I am worried about Greg. Let's hear clip seven.
Oh God, this is crazy. This is like OJ. I mean, except if OJ never killed anyone.
Who said I never killed anyone?
What character?
Juice is loose, baby!
Yeah, that was a very disorienting scene because it really illustrates how far Kendall has come from last season when he was, you know, very dejectedly stuffing cash, into the mail slot of the family whose son he killed.
Mm-hmm.
To now he's kind of, you know, in a drug-induced bragging spree on maybe even killing this guy.
Yeah. And I mean, we talked about this in the preview episode as well, that, you know, is this going to be the season where that comes out? But I'm worried if, you know, Kendall accidentally tells Greg what's going to happen to Greg, if he's the one to have this knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. I that is the thing that worries me more about Greg than his continuing incompetence. but a lot of very funny moments with Cousin Greg, and It's funny to hear Cousin Greg sort through Twitter, basically, and figure out who's trending and who's following Kendall. All that stuff I thought was, it felt very, very plausible.
Yeah, so, the headline is "The Internet is Big" was very good.
indeed. So what else happens this episode, Tara?
Well, let's talk about Rava, because the way Kendall and Naomi, who ends up coming over for dinner, the way they act in her home is appalling. Clip five.
Fuck's sake! Greg, what the fuck?
You're up, Ken? Jess, can you?
Yep.
Ken?
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry.
Yeah, I'm right here.
I'm sorry. Did you not see that there was dust all over the bottle?
Okay?
Did you not think to? No, no, it's fine.
I really had no. I'm really sorry, Rava.
It is fine.
What?
That was one my godfather gave me.
Naomi told me to open it, Ken.
Oh.
And so I just...
I'm very sorry.
I am so sorry.
Greg, that's not...
Hi.
Hey.
Hey. Ooh. Sorry.
No. Guys, drink it. Enjoy it.
It's
fine.
I don't want any, personally.
It's fine. It's good. It's like when someone breaks something beautiful and it reminds you that nothing lasts. Enjoy it.
I'll get some napkins.
All these brilliant fucking women, Greg.
I mean,
right, I must be doing something right.
The takeaway for Kendall being I'm doing something right with all these wonderful women around me is like so the obliviousness and the non-apology about the bottle is so infuriating. And so here's why I think this bothered me more almost than anything that he's done in his life. You know, when you're watching a movie and there's a scene, this happens in one of the Jackass movies, where like someone gets a paper cut that's really bad. Mm-hmm. It's like the body horror that you experience is greater because you know what that feels like than if you got shot, for example, which like happens in movies all the time and maybe, you know, is not as visceral for you because most of us will probably be lucky enough to not get shot in our lifetimes. This is why like all the other dumb rich shit that they do didn't bother me as much as this. It's like just having an inconsiderate person in your space, in your home, like wrecking it up. This really bugged me. What about you?
Yeah, it's horrifying. And I felt it particularly acutely even before we got to the wine scene, you know, when Kendall's like, hey, he's clearly already taking over all of her space mm-hmm. and already colonizing her space, basically. And then he's like, hey, we're just going to be another 4 to 5 hours, okay? And it's clearly already like very late at night.
It's dark out.
Yeah.
Like it's terrible.
The other thing to remember is that in season 2, episode 10, Naomi had joined Kendall on the boat, right, mm-hmm. along with the entire family, and Logan had her sent away. And during that time, he kind of acknowledged that she and Kendall, she kind of enables Kendall's drug activity at this point.
Yes.
Which is very sad because when they first met, they were both in recovery.
Mm-hmm. But, for that day. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that at this point, it's very clear that they're not anymore.
Yeah.
You know? And so that is a bummer as well. But yeah, I completely agree with you. It's horrifying. And I felt like it was going to come to a head and it, you know, in this episode of him using her space so much. And it came to a head in the most painful way imaginable. But I liked how her quote about things being temporary was a lovely commentary on both the wine and also their marriage.
Yeah.
And also life. So.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Rava is a character I've always wanted to know more about. Natalie Gold has been used very sparingly through the series. And I think her performance as like the ex-wife of a person like Kendall is very well observed. I'm always drawn to her in the scenes she's in. She has a really like lovely natural quality. So well, it wouldn't really make sense for her to be in this season more, probably. We may not see her again, but I was glad to see so much of her here.
Yeah, I agree. I've always appreciated her contributions to the show, and particularly last season, actually season one, I think I was very struck by how she acted with Kendall mm-hmm. when he relapsed, you know?
Yeah.
That stuff I thought was very powerful because like there was this kind of knowingness to what she was doing with him
mm-hmm.
That I thought was very very touching. So
yeah, I agree.
Like she's been on this rodeo before, you know, she knows mm-hmm. how this movie plays out. So
for sure. So Kendall, the first we see of him is he's in a bathroom this time, and again another hotel bathroom right after the press conference. And it's sort of a different take on his bathroom scene from the series premiere where he like got very angry, screamed into a towel, made a little mess at Logan's place, and then sadly cleaned it up after himself. What did you think of the reiteration of Kendall in a bathroom having feelings?
Yeah, I liked it. And it's interesting. Did you hear like he was making a noise?
Yeah, he was like exhaling really
loud.
Loud enough that Greg could hear it through the door.
It's creepy. It's creepy. Mm-hmm. But I liked it. And I really liked how, again, in just now and also in your recap, you brought up like how this scene is a mirror image to season one and him having the meltdown in the bathroom. Now this guy's on top of the world, right? ...
Yeah. Yes.
So, yeah.
So you've already sort of tipped your hand about this. Do we think he got high in there off screen and is just doing more and more coke during the day when we're not looking at him? Or is it just or mostly that he likes to fight like Logan and that this whole experience has just energized him?
I do think it's very odd that, again, as we discussed earlier, in general, the show shows you stuff that's happening.
Yeah.
You know, what I mean by that is there is very little that takes place off screen that is mm-hmm. relevant to what is going on screen.
Right.
With the possible exception of Logan Roy's machinations.
Yes. Yeah.
But like in general, the show doesn't play like that. And so mm-hmm. it was weird to me that Kendall clearly seems to be under the influence of drugs in this episode, but we never see him actually do them.
Right.
So I'm going to suspect it's off screen, but it is weird for the show if that's the case.
Yeah.
And I think it hadn't even entered my mind the possibility that he wasn't on drugs until you said it just now. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, he loves the attention, right? Like yeah. Logan, or not Logan, definitely Logan calls him in the car, but that's not who I meant. Naomi calls him and they do this gross thing back and forth where it's like the schmoopy scene from Seinfeld where she's like, I think you might be the best person in the world. And he's like, yeah, but what if I am? And that like go back and forth until Jess is like, hang up.
Yeah. It's so embarrassing.
Yeah. It's brutal. I feel like we could talk about him thinking that he could do all of his revolutioning in the Waystar office for hours. Like, I know that being an oblivious rich idiot is what the show is about, but he is supposed to be the competent one in the family. Like, his surprise every time Carolina or Jess is like, no, you can't go there, is very funny.
I agree. It's funny that he thought he could just carry on with business as usual, and it shows, like you said, how oblivious he is. So yeah.
And he, among the many meetings that we see Kendall have at Rava's place, is with a couple of media monitors / publicists and, Clip Six.
I would love to work with you, but if it's cool, and I know you guys are the best, but is it okay if this is still a pitch?
Of course.
Great.
So, we have a lot of thoughts.
Yeah.
Communication planning and positioning thoughts. How we can leverage our relationships with significant writers at major outlets.
Yes.
Prepare to prime and amplify some impressive secondaries.
Great, great. So shall I talk or will you?
Well, we want to hear your thoughts, of course, but you want to start off just hearing our 5 points?
Sure, sure. You go.
Okay.
But I think the headline needs to be, fuck the weather, we're changing the cultural climate. But you go.
Okay, I mean,
For context, I'm talking to the Times about an op-ed, draft an alternative corporate manifesto, drop a rapid reaction TEDx, shit like that.
Wow, that's great.
It's cheesy as fuck, but, you know, I need people to see this was part of a coherent philosophy, not just punching an old guy in the fucking nose. Yeah?
Right, right. That is in line with our thoughts. So,
well, I may as well say, on a dumb level, I'd like my Twitter to be off the hook. This could all get super earnest, so I was thinking of hitting up some BoJack guys, you know, some of the Lampoon kids, just to smash that shit, make my feet a little powder keg people need to check in with.
Like cool tweets to position you?
Yeah, that would be the straight leg chino way of putting it. Cool tweets.
Fuck you.
No, sorry, I'm kidding. I know you guys are the best.
That was Kendall interacting with PR reps from Barry Schneider. And that was my favorite scene from the episode, because I thought the woman that was kind of the account manager was... Like, I have been in on those meetings before, basically,
yeah.
Specifically on the client side.
Mm-hmm.
And she was acting extremely, like, her performance is almost exactly how someone in that position would behave.
Yeah.
And I thought she handled the situation really well and professionally. Because that's what she never says no to him. She doesn't evince any frustration
mm-hmm.
that he's kind of being an asshole and talking over her. So I thought, meanwhile, he's like embarrassing himself. I thought it was perfect.
Oh, but, yeah. Yes. Including like they start out. I mean, I'm sure going into it, they must know what he's going to be like. But, they say there are money jobs and there are heart jobs and we just love everything you're doing. And then by the end of it, they're like, oh, God, it's going to be a money job. But like,
yeah,
the joy that Jeremy Strong takes in like making Kendall the embodiment of cringe is so great. Like, he just a couple of the Lampoon kids, it's so good.
Some BoJack guys,
BoJack
guys. Get some BoJack guys in there.
So just one last overall question. Do we think that this episode's plot was so straightforward? I mean, a lot happened, but at the same time, it felt very linear. Was that an acknowledgement that the previous season ended 2 years ago, almost to the day, and that we might all need to be eased back into the world of the show? What did you think of that?
I thought the show did a really good job of setting up probably what is going to be the big conflict, if not for the season, then the next few episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree that there is a little bit of handholding and like reintroducing each character and what their function is. Like most of the characters get something to do in the episode. And more importantly, you remember what the dynamic is. On that note, Tara, I think that like one of the things that I think is going to be the question I have this season. I love this show. I can't imagine not loving the show. I've spent so much time watching the show, you know, over the course of the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed this episode as well. Like, I thought this was a great example of a good Succession episode.
Yeah.
But one question I have is how much this show is going to shake things up from a status quo perspective. And in this episode, we have yet another scene of Logan Roy, you know, live picking who the next CEO is. And it's like the question of who is going to be the successor. I feel like they have wrung a lot of juice out of that stone, basically. And I don't know how much more juice they can wring out of it, is what I'm saying. If I'm mixing metaphors here.
That's a weird critique for a show called Succession.
Yeah, I you know, I agree, but you know, my critiques are usually weird. I mean, I think just more like I guess for me, the show has transcended the original, I guess, title/premise of the show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it is it has gone beyond like who is gonna take over to like what is the relationship between these characters and how are they going to evolve?
Yeah.
And therefore, I am kind of curious, like, I guess I'm just saying it's not so much the question of the succession, it's more like how it's played out in the show, right?
Right.
I think there can only be so many more scenes of like, who's dad going to pick for the thing? You know, like,
yeah,
we've done that for so many episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious like if and how this season will shake that up and how willing it will be to disrupt the status quo. So,
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that's also part of easing the audience back into the show, right?
Yes.
You know, this is one of the main concerns that we deal with.
Yeah, I think that's what I was saying is like it's kind of repeating those dynamics, and that's a great way to get us back into the show and like remind mm-hmm. us of like what, you know, what the dynamics are and what the relationships are. But
yeah,
we'll see if and how it'll evolve. So
yeah, I mean, I think people from the show have said that, you know, it won't be more than five seasons and it might only be four.
Yeah.
So I feel like part of like the ongoing arc has to be like who is getting dropped away from the succession line forever. And like that's what happened in season two, that Kendall like is not, it's not going to be him for sure now. So then the rest of the series is going to be about like who else is like X'd off the list permanently, you know?
Yeah. I do want to call out a couple moments I don't think we had time to highlight. One is the conversation between Roman and Logan. I know you mentioned it in the recap, but
mm-hmm.
I really liked how Roman basically kind of ixnayed himself from contention. Like, what was your read on that scene? You know, like he has the call and then Logan's like, it's not going to be Roman.
Yeah.
And my interpretation was like Roman basically did a shitty job in the call and, you know, didn't come off as a leader or as a killer. And, you know, Logan's like, nope, it's not going to be him. I am now reminded of why it's not Roman. I didn't know if you had any other interpretation of that, but.
Oh yeah. The opposite. I think Roman knew exactly what he was doing and he achieved his end.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. And the second thing I was going to say is I really enjoyed Tom trying to, you know, trying to pump up Shiv. And he's like, yeah, I think Jerry's great. And he's like, and then, you know, Logan is so sarcastic with him. He's like, oh, do you, Tom? You know?
Yeah.
I really love that dynamic. Like, he clearly has so much contempt and doesn't respect him at all. Mm-hmm. So their relationship's interesting to see play out on screen because we don't get to see it very often. So
yeah. Are you playing the reverse banjo? Is what Logan accuses him of.
He always has the greatest little one-liner. So,
yeah.
All right, Tara, why don't we get to our weekly segment on The Sweet Smell of Succession. Every week at the end, we always do winners and losers, as well as our quote of the week, our favorite quote. So we have winning Roy, losing Roy, winning non-Roy, and losing non-Roy. So why don't we start with who is the winning Roy this week, Tara Ariano?
I think we are aligned. I'm going to say it's Kendall for now. As I said in our preview episode, I don't think Kendall is going to be victorious overall, but for now he is riding high, perhaps literally.
I agree completely. I think he, you know, he has the lawyer that he wants. He has, I think, what is foretold to be Shiv at his back as well, based on where she's going in this episode. And,
right.
And he has Cousin Greg, the most important champion of all. So so I think he's in a good state. So he is my winning Roy as well. Losing Roy, Tara.
I'm going to say Shiv. For some reason, she keeps thinking that she's gonna come out on top and be Logan's favorite, and she keeps either fucking herself or getting fucked.
I'm going to say that Logan is a little bit of a loser of the week this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I foresee he might be the loser next week as well. You know, I've not seen next week's episode, but he might be. Just because I think he is on the outs of his family. He's in, is he at Sarajevo at the end of this episode?
He's in Sarajevo, yeah.
Yeah, he's like away from where he's most comfortable and seemingly without a significant part of his clan. And I think he's going to become increasingly more and more isolated. So Logan Roy is my loser of the week.
I think that's a good choice.
Winning non-Roy, Tara?
Lisa the lawyer, the most popular lady in town. Everyone's fighting over her. And she got to pick her client and also got to, you know, make Shiv look bad. So that was probably a side benefit.
Everyone always likes to make Shiv look bad. So yeah.
True.
I'm going to go on a limb and say Jerry.
Sure.
I feel like... You know, if you're taking over a failing company, then at the very worst, you're going to get a nice little golden parachute. And also a possible worst case scenario, the company fails and people say, hey, the company is going to fail anyway. And if you turn it around or you put on a good face, then they give you the credit for it. So she might be in a good situation here. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But she certainly has come a long way since season one, episode two, as you indicated, where
yeah.
she really didn't want the job at all.
Yes.
Weird that she didn't want the job then and seemingly is more okay with it now when the company is in a much worse state.
Well, but, I mean, it may just be that, you know, she can't say no. Her choices are do it or
right.
leave.
Yeah, I know? Agree. I think that's right. And losing non-Roy of the week, Tara.
Well, we didn't talk about her at all because she and Connor are barely in the episode. But Willa, poor Willa. I mean, we saw in the season two finale her play, Sans, was getting just wrecked by critics, and now it's in such a bad situation. It's turned into such a punchline on Broadway that Connor actually thinks they should lean into it and market it as, you know, the Broadway hate watch everyone should check out. And this is obviously not where she hoped her hard work would end, but that's where it is.
Indeed. I'm curious where the Connor... Willa relationship is going to go this season.
Yeah.
Because at the end, last episode, Connor was rapidly running out of money.
Yeah.
And he had asked Logan for more money, and Logan said, only if you quit your presidential run. And I don't think we have any resolution on that yet as of now, right?
Right.
So we'll see how that evolves.
Yeah, we didn't even say where they are. Logan is like, oh yeah, you two stay in Croatia. I don't know, I guess. Like, he just has no job for Connor.
And my losing non-Roy are the Barry Schneider reps who had to sit and listen to Kendall give his pitch for how he should represent himself publicly.
Mm-hmm.
I think they performed admirably, but tough situation to be in for them. And I hope that they are paid handsomely for it. So.
Yeah.
All right. Quote of the week. Tara?
It's like when someone breaks something beautiful and it reminds you that nothing lasts.
And why does this quote resonate with you, Tara?
Because I felt Rava in that moment so much. Rava is worse done by than even the victims on the cruise ships. Just kidding. That's worse, obviously. But I really felt for Rava.
I hear you. My quote is that there is a exchange between, is it, what's his name? Barry?
Frank and Carl.
Frank and Carl, sorry. I got my white men names mixed up. He's asked, Frank is asked, like, is this the worst it's ever been? And then he goes on this litany of vague references to things that have happened at the company.
Yeah.
First of all, your quote was my favorite quote, but this is my second favorite, given that you already took that one. where he says, quote, there were the tabloid suicides, the year we nearly went kablooey because of Argentina, the Tiananmen accommodations, the black cloud after Sally Ann, end quote. It's like,
yeah,
what are those things? I don't think we're ever going to find out. I hope we don't find out.
Yeah.
But you kind of get a sense of like what the history is. And I like that they made each name of each thing like slightly different in terms of its syntax, you know?
Yeah.
That's just, and yet, like, vague enough that you don't know what it is,
right?
But specific enough that you know it was bad.
It sounds bad, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, that is my quote of the week. I thought it was really, really well done. All right. That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of The Sweet Smell of Succession. Tara, as always, it's been a pleasure. It's been fun to get back on the horse again after a long time away.
So, 2 years later, who could have thought?
Who would have thought? We're still here. We'll be back next week. Find more episodes at successionpodcast.com. Email us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. Until next week, thanks for listening. We'll see you later.